finish the 24th chapter of Deuteronomy. Just going to read the 16th verse right now, then we'll go on into the rest of the chapter. We want to remember this is to the second generation, those that are going to go in and inherit the land of Canaan. Moses is instructing them. We all need instruction. That's what this word is for, is to instruct us in righteousness. Let's turn to 2 Timothy, what this word is. 2 Timothy 3, and this is what, why the word is so needed in each one of our lives. 2 Timothy 3, and I would like to read the 16th and 17th verse. All scripture is given by inspiration of God. It's God-breathed. It's His word. And is profitable for doctrine or teaching, for reproof or conviction, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. It's this word that is going to thoroughly furnish us as we take it in and allow it to work in our lives. The 16th verse, the father shall not be put to death for the children, neither shall the children be put to death for the fathers. Every man shall be put to death for his own sin. Now this verse shows that each individual will stand as an individual before God. No one's going to stand in representation for someone else. They're going to stand for who they are. They're responsible, each one, each individual is responsible for their own actions. I would like to begin tonight in 2 Chronicles 25. You can also find this in 2 Kings 14, 1-6, but I'd like to read it out of 2 Chronicles 25. 2 Chronicles 25, and we'll begin with the first verse. And Amaziah was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Jehoiadan of Jerusalem. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a perfect heart. Now it came to pass, when the kingdom was established to him, that he slew his servants that had killed the king his father. But he slew not their children, but did as it is written in the law in the book of Moses, where the Lord commanded, saying, the father shall not die for the children, neither shall the children die for the fathers, but every man shall die for his own sin. We want to notice in verse 2 that he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a perfect heart. I would like to consider that for a moment over in 1 Kings 8. 1 Kings 8, we'll see what this, but not with a perfect heart, is speaking of. This in 1 Kings 8 is regarding when Solomon dedicated the temple to the Lord. And in verse 61, he said, let your heart therefore be perfect. The Lord is talking to Solomon, let your heart therefore be perfect. This word perfect here, it implies a wholeheartedness for God, single-mindedness, sincerity, not sinless perfection. We still have sin in this flesh. We still have two creations, but yet we can be wholehearted, we can be single-minded, and we can be sincere in walking with the Lord. But that Amaziah was not perfect in his heart. He was not wholehearted. Now let's go on over to Jeremiah 31. We can be wholehearted, just like Caleb and Joshua. They were both wholehearted, though Caleb's name means the wholehearted one. Jeremiah 31, and again, the fathers will not be put to death for the sins of the children, nor the children be put to death for the sins of the father. This thought in the 16th verse. In Jeremiah 31, and I would like to begin with the 27th verse. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast. And it shall come to pass that like as I have watched over them, to pluck up and to break down and to throw down and to destroy, to afflict so will I watch over them to build and to plant, saith the Lord. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten a sour grape, and the children's teeth are set an edge. But every one shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eateth the sour grape, his teeth shall be set on edge. Now let's turn on over to Ezekiel 18. There's two verses in Ezekiel 18 that shows the individuality of each person. And we know this is what the Lord said back in the garden. Ezekiel 18, I would like to read the fourth verse here. Behold, all souls are mine, as the soul of the Father, so also the soul of the Son is mine. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Then down in verse 20 of this same chapter, the soul that sinneth, notice it's singular, the soul, speaking of an individual, the soul that sinneth, it shall die. The Son shall not bear the iniquity of the Father, neither shall the Father bear the iniquity of the Son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon him, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon him. We have a very good example of the individuality, even in the priesthood. Let's begin in Exodus 28. There were five men chosen to be the priest. They were of the line of Aaron, but they were each individuals. They were one priesthood, but they were individuals. In Exodus 28 and the first verse, this is when the Lord gave Moses the instructions regarding the priesthood. He even had the ones picked out that he wanted to be the priesthood. And take thou unto thee Aaron thy brother, and his sons with him, from among the children of Israel, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office. Even Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, Aaron's sons. This began the Aaronic priesthood. Let's turn to Leviticus 10. They were chosen of God to be the priests. But when we disobey God, God does not take that lightly. We stand as individuals before him. In Numbers 10, let's read verses 1 and 2. Now remember, these are part of the priesthood. These were the two of the five that God ordained for the priesthood. But let's see their actions. In verse 1 of Leviticus 10, and Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer, and put fire therein, and put incense thereon, and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not. And there went out fire from the Lord, and devoured them. And they died, or their souls were consumed before the Lord. They disobeyed. God took care of it right now, regardless of who they were. They sinned. God does not take sin lightly. He can't stand sin. He took care of them on the spot. Yes, they were Aaron's sons, but they stood as individuals. Nadab and Abihu, yes, Aaron's two sons, part of those five that were ordained as the Aaronic priesthood. But because they disobeyed, this is how God feels about disobedience. God judged them right then and there. Yes, unlawful or profane. Now let's bring it on down to this church age. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 3. We each still stand as individuals. Adam and Eve stood as individuals before God, and God's order has not changed. 1 Corinthians 3, and we'll begin with the 12th verse. Now if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest. For the day, and this is the day of the Lord, shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort or what manner it is. Notice two words there. Every man's work and every man's work. Each man is going to stand before the Lord and give an account. Let's turn over to 2 Corinthians 5. 2 Corinthians 5 and the 10th verse. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body, according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. Again, everyone, we judge ourselves now. I liked that definition that Sister Bodie gave for this judgment seat of Christ. It's movable. We can judge ourselves now. We stand before the Lord now and say, okay, Lord, I did this and this. Please forgive me. He takes care of it right then and there, because we want to be judged now rather than later. Let's turn to Revelation 20. This is when a greater judgment is going to happen. And these will be individuals that will appear and be judged accordingly. Won't be husband and wife, brother and sister, mother and daughter, father and son. Each person that has ever lived from the time of Adam and Eve will stand before this great white throne judgment. In verse 11 of Revelation 20, and I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged out of these things, which were written in the books, according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, the grave and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they were judged, every man, according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So each individual will stand before the Lord at one time or another. Let's look at verse 17. Let's read verses 17 through 22 of Deuteronomy 24. Yes, and this is going to be the wicked dead, because that first resurrection will be before the thousand. Deuteronomy 24, 17. Thou shalt not pervert the judgment of the stranger, nor of the fatherless, nor take a widow's raiment to pledge. But thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in Egypt, and the Lord thy God redeemed thee thence. Therefore I command thee to do this thing. When thou cuttest down thy harvest in the field, and hast forgot a sheaf in the field, thou shalt not go again to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the work of thy hands. When thou beatest thine olive tree, thou shalt not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. When thou gatherest the grapes of thy vineyard, thou shalt not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. And thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt. Therefore I command thee to do this thing. Verse 17, the word pervert here. Thou shalt not pervert the judgment of these three that we'll be talking about. This pervert means to overthrow, or a turning aside, or a resting, and I looked up the word resting, was distorting or changing of judgment. Thou shalt not pervert the judgment. This judgment here is to judge, to bring matters to the rule of right, to administer justice. Justice has the thought of that which is right. And we want to note who this justice is concerning. It is the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. The stranger, in the Hebrew, it means a foreigner or an alien. We would be considered strangers in this world today. We're aliens, we're foreigners. Fatherless in the Hebrew means an orphan, one with no parents, one with no father. And the widow, in the Hebrew, it means one who is solitary. These all can be very impoverished, and defenseless. I would like to read a little bit of how the Lord feels about the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. We'll begin in Exodus 22. Exodus 22 will begin with verse 21. Thou shalt neither vex, and this word vex here means act violently or oppress a stranger, nor oppress him. For ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. Ye shall not afflict or oppress any widow or fatherless child. If thou afflict them in any wise, and they cry at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless. Over in chapter 23 of Exodus, and the beginning with the sixth verse, 23:6, thou shalt not wrest the judgment of thy poor in his cause. Keep thee far from a false matter, and the innocent and righteous slay thou not, for I will not justify the wicked. And thou shalt take no gift for the blind, for the gift blindeth the wise and perverteth the words of the righteous. Also thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for ye know the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. Let's look at Psalm 146:9. The Lord preserveth, or this preserveth here means guards or protects, the strangers. He relieveth, or he sets, or he restores the fatherless and the widow. But the way of the wicked he turneth upside down. Let's look at Isaiah 1:17. Learn to do well. Seek judgment. Relieve the oppressed. Judge the fatherless. Plead for the widow. Now the Lord is very concerned with the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. These are those that Jesus knows needs him. They are needy. They need him as their companion, their provider, their protector, their guide, their teacher, and the one who loves them. These need him. Let's consider the stranger. The stranger here is outside of the covenant relationship of Israel. He was not an Israelite, therefore he was a stranger. The stranger had no means by which to make a living, as the stranger inherited no part of the land of Canaan. He was a stranger. He was not an Israelite, therefore he was not of one of those tribes that inherited. He had no way of making a living. Let's look at Ephesians 2. We'll read in Ephesians 2 that the Gentile at one time was a stranger. Let's begin with the 11th verse. Ephesians 2:11. Wherefore remember that ye being in time past Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by that which is called the circumcision in the flesh made by hands, that at that time ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, speaking to the Gentiles, ye who sometimes were far off are made nigh by the blood of Christ. We were a non-participant. We were strangers. We were aliens. We were not of Israel, as we read there in verse 13. But let's read verses 14 to 19. For he himself is our peace, who hath made both one, and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances, for to make in himself of twain one new man, so making peace, that he might reconcile both unto God in one body by the cross, having slain the enmity thereby, and came and preached peace to you, speaking to the Gentiles which were afar off, and to them speaking of the Jews that were nigh. For through him, through Christ, we both have access by one Spirit unto the Father. Now therefore ye are no more strangers or aliens and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and the household of God. Let's turn to chapter 3. This also speaks of how the Gentiles are no longer strangers. Ephesians 3, and we'll begin with the first verse. For this cause I, Paul, the prisoner of Jesus Christ, for you Gentiles, If ye have heard of the dispensation of the grace of God, which is given me to you word, how that by revelation he made known unto me the mystery, as I wrote afore in a few words, whereby when ye read, ye may understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ, which in other ages was not made known unto the sons of men or unto the children of Israel, as it is now revealed unto his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit, that the Gentiles are fellow heirs of the same body and partakers of his promise in Christ by the gospel. Now, let's look at in the Gospel of John, chapter 10, the Gentile who was a stranger at this time is seen. John 10 and the 16th verse. We'll begin with the 14th. John 10, 14. I am the good shepherd and know my sheep and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep have I, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The other sheep, he's speaking of the Gentiles. He's looking forward to the Gentiles who will be made one with the Jews. Let's look over in chapter 17 of John. Again, he speaks of the Gentile. We know this is the Holy of Holies of the New Testament, and this is Jesus' prayer. He's praying to his Father. Here in verse 20, neither pray I for thee, speaking of those at the present time, the Jews, neither pray I for these alone, but for them. Again, he's looking to the Gentiles that would be made one at the cross, for them also which shall believe on me through their word. Before Calvary, the Gentiles were considered strangers or aliens, but not since he made, because of his blood being shed there in Ephesians 2, we are no longer strangers, but we're one with him. Now, let's consider the fatherless. The fatherless is one who has no father. He has no father to provide for them, to protect, or to teach them. The fatherless, they're orphan. Let's look at Psalm 10, 14. Psalm 10 and the 14th verse. Thou hast seen it, for thou beholdest mischief and spite, to requite it with thy hand. The poor committeth himself unto thee. Thou art the helper or the defense of the fatherless. Let's look at Psalm 68. Psalm 68, and we'll begin with the 4th verse. Sing unto God, sing praises to his name. Extol him that rideth upon the heavens by his name, Yah, and rejoice before him. A father of the fatherless and a judge or an advocate of the widows is Elohim in his holy habitation. Let's look at in the Gospel of John again, chapter 14. And we'll begin with the 16th verse, John 14, 16. And I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another Comforter, that he may abide with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him. But ye know him, for he dwelleth with you, and shall be in you. I will not leave you comfortless. And this word comfortless here is rendered orphans. I will not leave you orphans. I will come to you. We are not fatherless anymore. We that have accepted Jesus Christ as our Savior, we have a Father, and we have a name in Proverbs 22:1 and Ecclesiastes 7:1. It says, a good name is more desired, a good name, and that name is Son of God, and that's what we are sons of God. Now let's consider the widow. The widow, she has no husband to provide for her, to protect her, to love her, or to be a companion to her. It says that you shall not take a widow's raiment to pledge. To take a widow's raiment as collateral or pledge was not allowed, as her raiment was her only source of covering, and no means to obtain another. She had no way of making a living. That raiment that she had was the only thing that she had for warmth. She had no, if it was taken away, how would she obtain another? And no doubt this raiment also was her only source of warmth. I would like to read Ecclesiastes 4. Ecclesiastes 4, and I would like to begin with the 9th verse. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? This is what this widow needed this raiment for. She had no heat. This was her covering. Now, in the instructions that Moses was giving to the second generation, God expected this nation to obey in what he was telling them, but we know they didn't in many different ways. In regards to the widow, the fatherless, and the stranger, let's look at Ezekiel 22. They strayed from his commandment regarding them. In Ezekiel 22, and we'll read the 7th verse. We'll begin with the 6th verse. Behold, the princes of Israel, every one, were in thee to their power to shed blood. In thee have they set light by father and mother. In the midst of thee have they dealt by oppression with the stranger. And in thee have they vexed the fatherless and the widow. This word vexed here, it means treated with violence or cruelty. The Lord didn't intend for these to be treated that way. They were not to be oppressed. They were not to be treated violently or cruelly. Now we have verse 18 and 22. If you compare the two, they're the same verse, with the exception in verse 18. In verse 18, it says, But thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in Egypt, and the Lord thy God redeemed thee thence. That's not mentioned down in verse 22. The verses are alike except for that. Now this nation of Israel was to never forget the oppression and the violence and the cruelty that they suffered at the hand of Egypt. Let's turn to Exodus 1. After Joseph died, there was another Pharaoh who knew not Joseph. They were never to forget, ever to forget what they went through down in Egypt. Let's begin with the 11th verse of Exodus 1. Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh treasure cities, Pithom and Ramesses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were grieved because of the children of Israel, or they abhorred them. And the Egyptians made the children of Israel to serve with rigor. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage in mortar and in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service wherein they made them to serve was with rigor. This word rigor means to break apart or with severity. They were never to forget the conditions that they endured down in Egypt. In this 18th verse, and the Lord thy God redeemed thee thence. They were slaves whom God alone through his power redeemed them out of Egypt's hand. As a result of never forgetting his commands to them, that's why they were instructed in the way that they were instructed in verses 19, 20, and 21. They were to remember they were slaves, how hard they had to work. Well, when it came to their people, God made provision for these fatherless, the fatherless, the stranger, and the widow. In verse 19, we see, When thou cuttest down thine harvest in the field, and hast forgot a sheaf in the field, thou shalt not go to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. We read the same thing in verse 20 regarding thine olive tree and the grapes of thy vineyard. These were very important. Thine harvest in verse 19 speaks of the grain that was used for food. It was to be left. They were not to go back and to clean the field. In verse 20, we read of the olive tree. The olive oil was necessary. It was necessary for their food, for medicinal purposes. They used the olive oil for their lamps. They also used olive oil to anoint the offerings that were brought to the Lord. In verse 21, we read of the grapes of the vineyard. The grapes were necessary for food as well as for their beverage. They put it through the wine press and they made wine. Each of these three, the grain, the olive oil, and the grapes, were all necessary staples for the Jewish people. For each and every day of their life, they needed these staples. But we want to consider for a moment, each of these had to be ground. The grain had to be ground. The olives had to be beaten. And the grapes had to be pressed before they were ever useful to the stranger, to the fatherless, or the widow. Jesus came into the world that he could redeem each one of us out of slavery to Satan. But in order to do that, he was ground, beaten, and pressed in the winepress of God's wrath as he became sin for us. God had to turn his back. Let's turn to Isaiah 53. Jesus is our staple for our everyday life. We need him in order to live. Isaiah 53, and I would like to begin with the fifth verse. This is looking forward. Isaiah is prophesying of what would happen to Jesus. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was beaten or bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we were healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed. He was treated without mercy. And he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb. So he opened not his mouth. He was willing to be ground and beaten and put in the winepress for us. He became sin. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians 5:21. For he hath made him sin for us, who knew no sin, that we might become the righteousness of God in him. I would like to give you two references over in Leviticus regarding how they were to care for their harvesting and their grapes. In Leviticus 19, 9 and 10, we read of how they were to harvest their crops. They were to leave some for the poor. Also in Leviticus 23, 2, Brother McIntosh, he had a very good thought on this regarding these fields full of grain and olives and grapes. He said the owners of the field that had the grain, the olive grove, and the vineyard were not to be governed by a spirit of grasping, or they were not to be greedy. Who made those crops grow? Who caused that seed to sprout and to grow? It was God. That honestly belonged to the Lord. So God had the right to make this provision for the fatherless, the widow, and the stranger, because they were without. The owner was to have an attitude of giving willingly in accordance with what God said. He was to be in agreement. Now let's turn to Ruth 2 in regarding this. This is called they would have to glean. The stranger, the fatherless, and the widow would have to go out and they would have to glean this. We have a very good picture of this in Ruth, in Ruth chapter 2. Now, we want to remember Ruth was a widow. She had no husband. He died in Moab. And so did Naomi's husband die in Moab. They were both widows. They had no way of making a living. They had no way of obtaining their sustenance for each day of their life. But let's look in Ruth 2, and we're going to not read the whole chapter. We're going to read a verse here and there. In verse 2 of Ruth 2, and Ruth the Moabitess said unto Naomi, let me go to the field and glean ears of corn after him in whose sight I shall find grace. And she said unto her, go, thy daughter. Verse 3, and she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the kindred of Ahimelech. Now let's go down to verse 6. And the servant that was set over the reapers answered and said, it is the Moabitish damsel that came back with Naomi out of the country of Moab. And this is Boaz speaking. And then she said, I pray you, let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and hath continued even from the morning until now, that she tarried a little in the house. Let's look at verses 15 to 17. I would admonish you to read the whole chapter. It shows the attitude of Ruth's heart. In verse 15, and when she was risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not. And let fall also some of the handfuls of purpose for her, and leave them, that she may glean them, and rebuke her not. So she gleaned in the field until even, and beat out that she had gleaned. And it was about an ephah of barley. Now gleaning. Gleaning is a going over so as to collect all that may have been left during the harvest. Now, to glean is no picnic. Glean, to go out and glean, it takes effort. It is hard work because you have to search. It's just not going to jump up at you. You got to move things around. You got to see where you can see. You pick it up. I helped my dad glean a field of ears of corn. There's a lot of bending over. You get your bucket full, you carry it back to the wagon. You start over, bending down, picking that ear of corn up and putting it in your bucket. Ruth was a hard worker, and Boaz saw that. He saw the dedication that she had to make herself, to allow herself to obtain enough for sustenance, not just for herself, but for Naomi. She was thinking not only of herself, but she was thinking of Naomi first. For the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, gleaning was necessary. As if they didn't glean, they didn't eat. They went without. If they didn't go out and glean for what they were going to eat, they went hungry. God provided for them, for the fatherless, the stranger, and the widow. He provided them. He provided for them. The provision was there, but the one that is hungry needs to go after it. They're not expected everything to be handed to them. Let's read 2 Thessalonians 3:10. They had no other way of obtaining their sustenance. 2 Thessalonians 3 and the 10th verse. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. And this is what the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow knew. I don't go out and glean the fields that the Lord has provided me to glean. I'm going to starve. It's as simple as that. Now, because the Lord provided. When the Lord provides us something, take it. He provided that gleaning in the vineyard and in the olive grove and in the field. It was there for the taking. But yes, if you're hungry enough, you go out and get it. Let's turn to Genesis 3. This is man's lot in life, and there's no getting around it. Genesis 3, and I would like to begin with the 17th verse. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it, cursed is the ground for thy sake, and in sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return. That is man's lot in life. If you're going to eat, you've got to go work. Sweat a little. Appreciate that work and that effort that's being put out. Verse 22, I would like to look at verse 22 just a little more. Back in Deuteronomy 24, I mentioned how this is similar to verse 18. And thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt. Therefore I command, and this word command here is charge or appoint. Therefore I charge thee to do this thing. God speaking. When God commands us, I think of today in different things in the world, they command you to do something. Well, they really don't have, they shouldn't have that type of wording. They can't command another person to do something. But anyway, when the Lord commands us to do something, he means business. I charge you, or I appoint you to do this thing. This word remember, and thou shalt remember, it means to be mindful or to retain in one's memory. And this is the second time that Moses states this before and after the mention of the provisions for the strangers, the fatherless, and the widow. Number two is the number of witness. They were never, ever to forget those 400 years of slavery in Egypt. Absolutely not. Now, where have we been taken from? Do we remember where we've been brought from? Let's look at Colossians 1. We should never, ever forget what we've been delivered from and delivered unto and the power that obtained it for us. First, did I say Colossians? I hope I did. Colossians 1, and we're going to begin with the 13th verse. Who hath delivered us, and this word delivered here means to rescue from. He rescued us from the power of darkness and hath translated us into the kingdom of the Son of his love, in whom we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins. We've been delivered. Egypt, a type of the world. We've been delivered out of Egypt. We have been delivered. We've been rescued. Because Satan is the god of this world. We've been rescued from and translated into. Why would anyone desire to go back and be mixed up with the tyranny that is involved in this world? The tyranny of Satan. Let's never ever forget what we've been delivered from. As the Lord admonished and told Moses to tell that second generation, never ever forget the slavery you were under. Let's keep that for us too. Let's never ever forget what we've been rescued. He rescued us. He's rescued us. Let's live in the realm that he has delivered us unto.